A very good morning. It was a long weekend and back. So last week there were three talks. First one was very introductory about quantum matter. The second talk I went to the famous Einstein Fermat theory of solids, the simplest effective Hamiltonian that you could imagine. And then Einstein started again. And then from there I jumped into hydrogen bonded ferroelectrics, where you have very light hydrogen atoms. They are essentially trapped in some renewable potential. And then this renewable potential has several levels. Focus on the lowest nearly degenerate level, then ignore the higher levels. The problem becomes like a solar spin model in which the two states are represented by a solar spin and corresponding Pauli operator, which causes transition treatment. Then I said that when you have these hydrogen bonds in a solid like potassium, iridium, phosphate, hydrogen bond. Ferroelectric, there is a coupling between these two neighboring degree of freedom. Then because of this approximation that we pick up the lowest two level, we get what is called quantum spin chain. Then I said that that quantum spin chain gets transformed into the fermion problem and the Majorana zero modes come. You must have seen it in your tutorial in detail. So that's where I stopped, and then I was doing some random walk. So today, and then I started talking about Bose-Einstein condensation last time, briefly. And Bose-Einstein condensation is something you are all familiar with. So it's a remarkable phenomenon. So now there is experimental realization of it in the modern time through what are called cold atoms. In fact, it's a very nice review article by Tony Leggett. In Reviews of Modern Physics, 2001. He basically talks about Bose-Einstein condensation involving alkali atoms. Because if you consider an alkali atom, they typically have a valence electron, they have a nuclear spin. Together, they can form the three zeros. So there have been beautiful experiments, Nobel Prizes, and so on. So the only like it goes into the art of the problems of 3D finding and discusses them in great detail. So these are the reference for cold atoms and Bose-Einstein condensation. And the Bogle would be the same. And I also last time indicated briefly that it was London who pointed out that liquid helium pole, which is a supercooling, can be thought of as a Bose-Einstein condensation. That was a far-reaching conclusion. It was ahead of its time because the liquid helium atom was so strongly interactive. And he noticed that if he takes the mass of that particle in the helium pole and then substitutes in the expression for Bose-Einstein condensation temperature, he got 4 Kelvin or 3.5 Kelvin. The experiment rate was 2.7 Kelvin. So that was a great time. So in spite of strong interactions and so on, there is some aspect of Bose-Einstein condensation and more also profound consequences that I indicated briefly. And unfortunately, since this course is, I'm supposed to teach several quantum matters, I can only indicate to you that things are. And I encourage you to look at these problems. So I found, when I started doing quantum metaphysics, I studied in great detail quantum theory of solid by Kittel. In addition to his other books like thermal physics and solid state physics, Kittel has a very beautiful put quantum theory of solids, I always refer to it whenever I am visiting. I will not be doing my graduate student thing. It's a remarkable book. Then I found that there are two other books which are also very good. So one of them is very modern. I did not know about this book before. I came across very recently. Basic aspects, this is called Advanced Quantum Condensed Matter Physics by Michael L. Bakhtatoman. I'll write it down. Advanced Quantum Condensed Matter Physics, Cambridge University Press, 2020. It's a fat book. What I like in the book is everything is worked out in great detail. Also, there are nice problems worked out. So this discusses, in fact, they have a subtitle, One Body, Many Body, Anthropological Perspective. So it covers, at least the book, it's a big book. It covers all the aspects that I want to talk in this course in great detail. This is one book. There's another book by my friend, Daniel Komsky. Basic aspects of quantum theory of solids. Quantum theory of solids. So this is also a very nice book. So whenever you have difficulties, you can refer to this book for details of whatever I'm going to see. These are all very nice references. So today, I'm going to talk to you about two effective Hamiltonians, which are like Nobel Prize winning Hamiltonians, which are very useful, and they drive many of modern condensed matter physics from the point of your quantum information theory and quantum computing and so on. The beautiful phenomena that are emerging from this quantum matter are guiding us towards new qubits and so on. So I remember whenever I did my many body theory study, the emphasis was on equilibrium statistical mechanics very often. Because you have some ordered phase and then you go to your disordered phase, or you have a quantum phase transition from ordered to disordered phase. But now you find that the emphasis is not on phase transition. Because phase transition is something you understand reasonably well thanks to decades of developments, including universality hypothesis and renormalization group approach and so on. So now the focus is on nature of excitation, unusual excitation. But previously we had photons, then we had electron hole excitations, we had fermions, that was it. Now we have novel excitations coming in, simple strongly correlated system, which could be used for quantum computation and quantum information theory. So the excitement is now on, not on equilibrium state mechanics, on nature of excitations, nature of unusual excitations, nature of unusual quantum phenomena near the ground state. So which is what, so in order to do that, it's good to study two model Hamiltonians, which are very well known. I'm sure you have come across them. I will just give some perspective on that. One is Bobole Bacteria. Weakly interacting Bose gas. Very important. So, system, when Bogolyubov wrote it, he was thinking, having in mind, making me a quote. But now, it is literally, directly applicable to weakly interact with bosons called active system, which you will see later. So this is a simple, again, as I said before, Einstein had a very simple model Hamiltonian. Then we had another model Hamiltonian. Now we have another model Hamiltonian of interacting bosons, and you can solve them using what are called Hartree-Fock theory. I will introduce you Hartree-Fock theory in case you are not familiar with it. That will be called Bogoliubov of Hartree-Fock theory. It's very easily doable in terms of mathematics, in terms of concepts also, very simple, but it has profound consequences. So what we have is, we have a Hamiltonian. Particles in the confined in a box. So this is the kinetic energy, the mass of the particle. Then we have some potential between them. So now, in arriving at this effective Hamiltonian, we are going to assume that the gas is very dilute. The range in which the potential is operating is very small compared to the interparticle distance. For example, if you take a helium 4, suppose you have dilute gas of helium 4, or this alkali atoms, which are bosons, bosonic alkali atoms, you may find some range of potential, and you assume that this range, let's call it as A, is much small compared to interparticle radius R0, which is related to density. Yes, sir. The interparticle distance is larger and the density is smaller. So then it turns out you can replace this potential by a delta function. That is, there is a repulsion interaction between them of strength V, V naught, whenever they touch each other. And it turns out this idealization already captures very fascinating physics of interacting bosons, Goldstone modes, and all the rich physics of flux quantization and so on. So this is what Bogoliubov solved. And of course, this problem is not exactly solved. We have to make approximations as in conventional solving. The approximations work extremely well, and we can also find out what are the corrections. So now we go to second quadrature. You are all familiar with second quadrature representation for bosons. So these are kinetic energy of the particle. So this directly gets translated. If I put the particle in a box, I have moment, allowed momentum coming through periodic boundary condition. I can assume periodic boundary condition. Then, because of translation invariance, what you have is then, since it's a translation invariant system, the total momentum of interacting two particles should be conserved. So you will have a delta function which says k1 plus k2 so you can appropriate. So this is the thing that you want to solve, and it turns out in one dimension this problem is solvable. Thanks to work by Elliot Lieb and others, that you can use Bethe ansatz and solve it exactly, and even that is non-trivial. And then there is permianization and so on. I will not go into the details of that. So you can also imagine a problem in which you replace the delta function by a hard code. You say that is also another problem. Two particles, when they approach at distance less than, you know, there is a hard code repulsion. So it's infinity. So this problem has no energy scale, only length scale is there. Well, this is exactly sort of the 1 plus 1 dimension. There are the damn side solutions. It's something to leave the linear model in various models. So we will not do that. What we are going to do is, for practical purposes, we want to solve the problem approximately and get maximum insight. Yes.
Sorry, is that potential like a delta function at A, or is it infinite smaller than A?
Yeah. So this one, you regularize the delta function. You say that there is, when you have a potential appearing here, it has to have some energy scale. That you say, so you can actually get it by regularization trick. What you say is, you know, there are many ways of regularizing the delta function. You have e to the power of minus r and j. Times some v naught. And as you know, you don't remember the square root of, so you make a smaller and smaller, the Gaussian will become narrower and narrower. Then it will become a delta function. So it's a Gaussian, and also you can also do another approximation in which, imagine the potential is like this, some width, a naught, some height. So make the width smaller and make the height larger so that the product remains the same. That also will be a delta function. So this is sort of a regularization. That is, delta function can be obtained from functions like these that are Gaussian or even Lorentzian, very properly regularized.
So is this like next step that's the hardcore? Is it one step of the regularization of a single delta function?
No, hardcore is not regular. It's an independent thing.
Exactly. It's a different thing where they're just not allowed to be closer.
Exactly.
Than
okay. So as I said, the hardcore, there is no energy scale. Only a length scale is there. So it just restricts the allowed space of the particle. That itself makes non-trivial consequences in terms of one-dimensional spectrum and statistical mechanics. Mm-hmm. They are related to, in fact, once you have hardcore, automatically the problem becomes fermionic. You can do Jordan with a type of track and get fermionic excitation, sorry, dance and so on. Okay. So this is as far as the model component is concerned. Now we want to solve this. Now we observe that in the absence of interaction, what we have is a free Bose gap. And there is a chemical potential, or we say that finite density of particles. And we all know at zero temperature, the occupancy of particle in zero momentum state is n. All the particles are sitting in zero momentum state. So, in other words, for zero temperature and the absence of interaction, the number of a diagonal a, where zero corresponds to zero momentum state, is equal to n. It's macroscopic. For example, if you look at Einstein quanon, and in the ground state, the quanon number of quanon is zero because, you know, each oscillator is in a ground state. And as you excite it, there will be one quanon or two quanons, and so depending on the temperature. Now, in this mode, all the bosons are sitting. So now you observed, this means if this be the case, let me look at the commutation relation between. Is this correct? Commutation basis 1. This is the fact that it makes it a boson. Now let me rewrite it. And I know that if I am looking at this commutation relation in the subspace of states close to the vacuum, namely Bose-Condensed state, this is a large quantity. So this has to be again equally large to give you 1. So then Bogoliubov observed, if this be the case, I can imagine this A naught operator behaving like a classical variable. So that's a very important point. So Bogoliubov made a bold assumption that I will replace A naught comma A naught dagger by something related to square root of n, where n is a number of particles. There may be a coefficient here. Some alpha. So these are bold assumptions. Once you make this assumption, then the problem becomes solved. So I have, yes.
Sorry, is that a, like, what is the A indexing? Is it momentum states?
Yeah, A is the Poisson operator for momentum K. In this case, I choose the K to be zero.
Uh-huh.
Zero momentum state. For example, if I think about particle in a circle, the wave function is square root of, so e to the power of 0 x.
Oh, is that a zero dag a zero equals n to the left of that?
Sorry,
that equation. What is the subscript on a?
Oh, again. So this is the number operator of the zero momentum.
Of the zero momentum. Okay.
So all the number of particles, macroscopic. This is a macroscopic number.
Yeah.
All the particles are there. So Bogolyubov observed
the n inside the Q is a number.
Yeah. So alpha could be a complex number. I will come. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. Actually, for students, if you could contrast with the fermions, where you would fill up the negative states, versus for these bosons, why they're all in that, because that's the lowest energy state.
Correct. Exactly. Yeah. Sorry. Yeah. Thanks a lot. So, if I think about free Fermi gas, what do you, Pauli principle tells me that I can put only one particle in the momentum state. So the distribution function for free Fermi gas is a well-known Fermi C. So it's 1 for k less than kf and 0 is n. And in contrast, when we look at bosons, n of k equals 0, everything is in this. The delta function, or if you want to put in terms of number, it's a macroscopic number. So this, so in that sense, the Bose distribution function is singularly different from Fermi distribution function. Yes.
Sorry, could you explain again the fermion diagram?
I'm plotting occupation in momentum space. You remember, we have particle in a box with periodic boundary condition. So the eigenstates are represented by momentum. So there is a zero momentum state or the longest wavelength state, and the next state, and so on. So in the case of fermion, for example, suppose I have two dimensions. This is kx, ky. And this is a zero momentum state. Then the neighboring states separated by 2 pi by L, where L is the size of the box. So the momentum space will be a lattice of k points. The thermodynamic limit as L tends to infinity, they will become a continuum. So Fermi only tells me that I cannot put more than two particles here, not than one particle here. So then the Fermi radius is large. Then what I do is I put have single occupancy in momentum space up to the radius, Fermi radius. That's what I'm representing here. So I'm walking from origin outwards, then sharply the occupation number falls in Fermi. In the case of bosons, everybody is sitting in the zero momentum state. That's what Bose-Einstein condensation theory also tells. You take zero temperature, everybody is in zero momentum state. At finite temperature, there are thermal fluctuations. So, for example, if you look at this quantity, this is something I did not do, but you must have done it in your undergraduate, that NK has some distribution like this. The strength of this is N, total number of particles, times some, which becomes temperature dependent. So at finite temperature, less than the Bose-Einstein condensation temperature, not all particles are sitting in the zero momentum state. Some of them spill out. So in fact, to be precise, N is equal to, that is, the occupancy of zero momentum state is equal to N, the total number of particles, minus E divided by, this you can exactly derive for Bose-Einstein condensation. There is a zero temperature, all particles are sitting in the zero momentum. This is occupancy of zero momentum state. And as you increase the temperature, there is depletion, because particles jump out of this zero momentum state. And then above TC, there are no particles in zero quantum state. So it becomes like the standard thermal distribution function. It may also remind you, all this is reflected in the solution of Bose-Einstein theory, that if you look at the chemical potential as a function of temperature, chemical potential is negative above the Bose-Einstein condensation temperature, then below that it becomes zero. So please recall this in point of view of the study. So that is the effect of temperature. Now we are looking for the effect of interaction at zero temperature, because all this is for non-interacting system, and whatever Bose-Einstein discovered was a kinematic consequence of statistics. There is no interaction at all. What particles don't interact. But however, there is a kinematics of bosons or fermions which makes fundamental difference in whatever you see. Okay. So Bakalikov observed this. And then I want to solve this problem. So what do I do? That means we consider this operator, which corresponds to two particles scattering. Some terms should dominate the energetics and kinetics. So what did we do? So let me look at, for example, let me take the two body term. And pick up the initial, these two momentum to be zero. Then by momentum consideration, I will be left with another term which is so Bogoliubov just picked up this term, he neglected everything, and then tried to solve this problem. So now what did Bogoliubov do? So what is it? It says two particles are in zero momentum state. There is a Hermitian conjugate also. What it says is two particles can jump out of the vacuum and go into K-K state, conserving the protein. And vice versa. Similarly, two particles with momentum K and minus K can scatter and get converted into zero momentum state. So this is what Bogoliubov isolated because of this observation that these bosons, boson operators behave like classical numbers. Okay, so this is, now you may ask the question, what is the value of A naught that I assume? That is where, yeah.
Again, just to have a physical picture in mind, we're talking about a superfluid.
Yeah.
If we're saying that everything is in the zero momentum state.
That's what happens in a Bose-Einstein condensed state. In the absence of interaction.
You know, how do I distinguish that from really a crystal in some way? Because they're not moving.
So in crystal, as you move, there is a density wave. Here, the particles are interacting among themselves and moving around. So on an average, the density remains uniform. Whereas in a crystal, in fact, this is a very important question that you're asking. This is related to what is called diagonal long range or an off-diagonal long range. I will come to it. So instantaneous picture of a helium liquid may locally look like crystal, but this crystal is undergoing quantum fluctuation. Whereas that's called short-range crystalline correlations. So if you pick up an atom, with very good probability the neighboring atoms will look like a crystal, but when you go to long distance, they will deviate from crystalline. So that is the meaning of short-range crystal ordering. In fact, this is a very important point. When you do the structure factor analysis of liquid helium 4 by neutron scattering, you do see a short-distance crystalline order. But they undergo quantum, it's like a molten crystal. Because suppose I take a crystal, then heat it. Above the melting temperature, I have no long-range order, but there will be local order. There will be local crystallizations which are undergoing thermal fluctuations and atoms will be dissociating from these small pieces and so on. So that's happening quantum mechanically. So that's all contained, at least approximately, in this term that I have picked up. So Bogolyubov would say that distance contains key quantum fluctuation arising from two-body interaction. It says two particles which move with opposite momentum can suddenly disappear and become part of the condensate, and vice versa.
In this ansatz that we're making, is it a zero and a dag zero or a I? What is the subscript?
This one.
Uh-huh.
You're asking about this. Comma. Sorry.
And they're both zero. They're both like the zero momentum operators, or
both are zero. So subscript zero corresponds to zero momentum operator.
Okay.
So, but what Bogolyubov observed is that this is the commutation derivation of boson operator.
Uh-huh.
Now, if one piece, namely number operator, is macroscopic in the part of the Hilbert space that I'm interested in, namely zero momentum state or ground state, then I can replace this also by equally large number, so the difference is 1. So this, according to him, meant that this operator can be replaced by some classical value, some C number. This is a bold assumption made by Bogolyubov in the 50s.
Why would it have a factor alpha if we know that a dag zero a zero has to be equal to n?
That's a good point. That's where interaction comes. So in the absence of interaction, at zero temperature, alpha is 1. But once you have interaction, it tells you that because of interaction, some of these zero momentum particles are pushed up. And that is what is happening from here, because it says some of the zero momentum particles disappear from the vacuum,
mm-hmm.
and then appear as finite momentum particles, and then they go back.
So n is the total number of particles, not the number in the condensate.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah, sorry, I should have been careful about the convention.
So the Bose-Einstein condensate is a sort of like in this limit is a sort of like a coherent state where we can.
Correct. So this is another important point. Whatever I'm doing, I can write in terms of coherent states also. This brings us to some other physics. I mean, it will become clear when I go to superconducting. As you know, coherent states are excited states of harmonic oscillators in which the particle number is not conserved, the phonon number is. It's a coherent superposition of many phonon states. But however, it has a sharp peak. So since you asked this question, let me talk about coherent state. A very important concept that's already available in the context of harmonic oscillator. Suppose I consider an oscillator. The eigenstates are denoted by Fock states, n equal to 0, 1. So these are all good eigenstates. So if you have n boson, we will maintain. But it turned out for practical issues dealing with lasers where there are many photons, it's more convenient to talk about superposition of Fock states rather than the Fock states themselves, and they become good approximations. So it's a very half a minute introduction to coherent states. So I denote a coherent state by this. Please correct me if I'm wrong. So what I do is, I take the vacuum, ground state of oscillator, and operate with this exponential operator, with a characteristic by a complex number alpha. Then of course you can expand it, exponential can be expanded. What you'll find is, it has one phonon, two phonon, and up to number. But then if you ask the distribution of number of phonons, that is peaked around some value n naught, which is related to the amplitude of alpha. That's a coherent state. And then coherent state also behaves like a classical state in the sense, if you look at the time evolution of this coherent state, these are all things that you can do as a simple exercise. So if I have a number eigenstate, it will not evolve in time, it will be only a phase factor. Suppose e to the power of I, ht acts on a number eigenstate, then what will I get? I'll get e to the power of I, which grabs wave or not, then can steam. So this is a standard phase evolution of eigenstates. Now what you find is, when you act on this, something special happens, continues to remain a provident state, but this alpha becomes time dependent. And please believe me, when you do the calculation, the real part of alpha and imaginary part of alpha starts looking like mean position and the mean momentum of the particle. So the time evolution of this coherent state becomes like an ellipse, like a harmonic oscillator. So if I take a pendulum, or if I have a particle in a particular limit here, what will it do? It will undergo harmonic oscillation. So yes, in the same way, a coherent state characterized with an alpha behaves like, if you take this state and find the expected value of position and momentum, that essentially follows classical trajectory. So that's why they are called semi-classical states. But there is a lot of quantumness there. Now, I think your question was, where is the coherent state coming? So it turns out, Bose condensed state can be rewritten as a coherent state. Because the particle numbers are so large, you can allow for square root of n fluctuation. And then they become better than Fock states in terms of ability to do mathematics. That's where the coherent state approximation for Bose-Einstein condensed state becomes very, very useful, and then even becomes exact in the thermodynamics. I will come to it. If I go into the details already, I'm just indicating to you. Good. So far, so good. Now, I want to solve this problem. And it should be solvable because what do I have? I have my kinetic energy term, which is plus this. This is my full Hamiltonian. Let me call it as a Bogolyubov approximation. So I have bilinear terms in boson operator. And here what do I have? What did Bogolyubov observe? He said that this behaves like C number. So I can replace them by C numbers. And what is the value of that C number, or what is the value of the coefficient alpha, is something that I will determine later, subconsistently, by energy minimization procedure. I will tell why. And otherwise, this problem becomes bilinear in oscillator, because this also can be replaced by C number. So you all know that bilinear Hamiltonian, boson Hamiltonian, or fermionic Hamiltonian, can be diagonalized by appropriate transformation. And that was done first by Bogolyubov in the context of that, so it's called Bogolyubov transformation. So what you do is, you find effectively plus V naught by N. I will come to this. This is so Bogolyubov has reduced the problem into one body problem because there is no two-body interaction. Yes.
And I just want to make sure, because it's the theory of weakly interacting.
Yeah.
Was a guess. So, but the solution does not depend on the coefficient of the interaction being
small. Going to be, yeah. In fact, it's very important.
It is.
It is going to be important. Because it's the interaction which decides how much is depleted. Yeah. So, if you look at this, this tells you. What does this term mean? This term tells you that in plane wave state, the particle remains wherever it is. It's a number of things. Whereas here, it says that because of interaction, it will spontaneously appear or spontaneously appear, disappear. Two particles with momentum k and minus k and disappear into the condensate or appear from the condensate. And the strength of that is, of course, will be VNR. And then also something that I put in VNR. So the way I will determine it is by minimization of total energy. This is where the Hartree Fock character comes.
And that only works.
Exactly. So I have not solved the problem. Just reiterate, in a way, it looks very simple, it looks like one body problem, with one unknown parameter namely A0. This is an unknown parameter. So I reduce the two body Hamiltonian, one body Hamiltonian, with an unknown parameter. Now this brings us to the notion of Hartree Fock theory or mean field theory. So suppose I want to start the mechanics of this problem. What do I do? Take trace of e to the power of minus theta x, full Hamiltonian. This is very difficult to offer. But then depending on the problem, I can try to solve the problem approximately by inventing suitable H, which is a one-body problem, the way that I have done it. So then what do? I replace my full density matrix, this is called a density matrix, by a trial density matrix. Then this will have some parameters. And of course, it will have a specific form. And how do I do it? What I do is, that's where I use minimization principle. Because if you do variational theory for many body system, you find that the free energy of the system is minus kBT. That's all you know. Internal energy and entropy, and rho is the e to the power of minus beta h, the density matrix. Now, variational theory tells me I can replace this rho by some trail density matrix, and the energy I get will be higher than the ground state energy. That's a variational theory. I will not go into the details of that. Please remember your very statistical mechanics idea. Then what I do is, I replace my complicated Hamiltonian by a simple one-body Hamiltonian with some parameter. Now this parameter A0 becomes a variational parameter. Now what I do is, since it is one-body problem, I can solve this problem formally exactly with some variational parameter, namely, in this case, it is alpha. That is, A0 is written as alpha. Then it is a total number of particles. Then I minimize it to alpha. That would give me the best energy or free energy consistent with the choice of my density matrix. So this is a spirit of infinity. Yes.
Sorry, what is the dependence of alpha in the
Let me come back. Sorry, somewhere it's there. So you remember. So you remember, I said that A0 in the case of non-interacting gas, the ground state is square root of n.
Oh, this
so is. In the case of interaction, it is going to be depleted. So less than the coefficient will be in step 1, it will be alpha, which is less than 1. So that is what happens. So when you do that thing, it will become V naught alpha square plus condition common. So the N and N will disappear, there's an N here. So this is the interaction parameter we put by hand. That's part of the problem. And this is something that will determine self-consistent by this. So what I have is, I have a minimization of free energy with respect to this parameter.
So you are treating like alpha not as like classical parameter?
It's a classical parameter. It has to be determined self-consistently by minimizing the free energy. So it is exactly in the spirit of variational theory. When you do a variational theory, what do? you assume a power of a wave function with some variation of parameter. And then you find the expectation value of the Hamiltonian with respect to the variation of state. And then whatever energy you get, you minimize it with respect to the variation of parameter.
So in this sense, when you write that not as an operator but as a C number, you're treating that as like a classical classical theory where the number of particle in the
zero
the BC is a classical object.
The fraction is a classical because in the pre-Bose gap at zero temperature. The fraction of particles in zero momentum state is 1.
Well, actually, it would be just a coherent interaction.
In the absence of, once you have interaction, what Bogoliubov observed is the fraction is still finite, maybe 20% or 99%, and others are in finite momentum state. So he focused on that fraction. That fraction can be thought of as a classical variable. That is the whole idea. Still, it's not an exact solution, but still, for practical purposes, it works very well in the future. All the ideas qualitatively correct. Quantitatively, you can go and make corrections. Whereas in one dimension, you can solve the problem. Yes.
I feel like I see people call lots of approximations Hartree-Fock.
Yeah.
What determines that something is a Hartree-Fock approximation?
Okay. So Hartree-Fock approximation was invented in the context of interacting fermions, like electrons in atoms or electrons in material. So when you do this carefully, I factorize the terms in terms of A0 and so on. In the case of fermions, instead of replacing a boson operator by a C number, you start replacing the sum of fermion bilinear by a C number. It'll happen in the BCS theory. Please wait for a while. Then it'll become called Hartree-Fock. So Hartree-Fock theory was invented, and what is a Hartree term and Fock term is coming from the antisymmetric principle. So I will do all those things.
I thought Hartree and Hartree-Fock was just assuming a product state, and then on top
of that, you assume a slate determinant or a product state.
Yeah.
So here it's a product state, mm-hmm. But then the question is, what is a product state? You can have a slate determinant of up and down speed for the case of electron problem. And when you do that, there will be energy coming from exchange of particles. And there is energy coming from the direct interaction. It's called Hartree term and Fock term. So those complications are less here. I'm hiding that actually. It's here also. So that's why it's called Bogoliubov Hartree-Fock theory. Whatever it is. So you can go back to Hartree-Fock theory when you look at atoms, for example. And then take understanding. So the basic idea is all this mysterious name Hartree-Fock corresponds to replacing a two-body problem by a one-body problem. That's all. There is an interacting two-body problem becomes effectively one-body problem. And then there are various ways of doing it. And then there are various Hartree-Fock solutions that you can imagine. In fact, in this problem, there's only one state that we have, which is staring at us. Whereas when you come to interacting electrons, there are many Hartree-Fock solutions. Something like charge density waves, spin density waves, ferromagnetism, so many, many things are there. So this can be also viewed, I leave it as an exercise to you, in terms of functional interactions. Because finally what I have is, I have to do some statistical sum of Hamiltonian. Then I can go to path integral representation of this partition function. And then what I mean is I will have some multi-dimensional space in which there are many, many minima. And I will do saddle point approximation about that minima. Each minima corresponds to one Hartree-Fock solution. So if you think about the pre-energy minima corresponding to this, there are many, many minima. But you try to capture the lowest minima and then do the physics, which is what you're doing. There will be minima corresponding to excited state or unstable states.
And just going back to your statement about reducing two body to one body, the way I'm understanding that right now is because you just assume a product.
Exactly.
Given by the one body problem
exactly.
Times two.
Except that this product state now is going to be kind of entangled because It has an A dagger, A dagger. So I have to re-diagram these things. So it's not going to be a product of the old Poisson state. There will be mixing between them. I will come to it.
And then one more question. The experimental success of this was the critical temperature, or what did
exactly
you both extract
so
that was
the
key?
Yeah, the experimental success of this was, firstly, you take free Bose gas. Does not support any sound mode. There is no collective mode. No collective mode.
Oh.
Whereas Bogoliubov theory gave you sound mode. But you can compare it with the experiments. Okay? And also Bogoliubov theory gave corrections to the percentage of condensation, transition, which also you can compare to the experiment. So that was the way that it began. So all these approximate theories, when you do Hartree-Fock theory, that is, you have very complicated states, many body states, linear combination of Fock states and entanglement. You choose appropriate basis and then approximate them by product states, as you said. So for example, if you have fermions, when I write down state determinant, then I can ask what are the orbitals. So it's a choice of orbitals which is doing all the three. At the end of the day, it's a syllabic determinant, but involving some set of 140 states. That 140 states can be different depending on what kind of Hartree Fock solution.
You still got 7 minutes.
Sorry?
Still got 7 minutes. So
please repeat.
7 minutes? You've still got time.
Okay, sure. Thank you. Okay, so yeah, what I'm doing is maybe I should have done fermionic case first, but the bosonic case is very clear. It's an important point that you said that I am assuming this to be a product state because it's own body. But above that, there is a mixing. The harmonic oscillator gets mixed previously. So, for example, if you take the oscillator AK, now it has big, and then I have A minus K. These two get mixed through this term. This is a very important point. So I have two modes, but now I'm mixing them. They spontaneous. Now I have re-diagrams. That's called Bogoliubov transformation. This was done by Bogoliubov, that's why it carries his name, Bogoliubov transformation. And I will not go into the details of it, please work it out. It's a very interesting exercise. Similar thing will happen for the boson, yes.
So we, in our tutorial, we did this calculation where we did a Bogoliubov transformation for the quantum Ising chain. Is there a clear parallel?
Exactly. So there's a very clear. So I anticipated BCS theory. Whatever our Bogoliubov transformation we did corresponds to BCS theory that I will do next. So there, yeah. Again, thanks for pointing out. You would have had something like this. So this is the kind of thing you would have in the transverse IC model. Though the fermionic mode at K and minus K get connected through this stuff. So you do both. Yeah, so you diagonalize it. So the only difference is, yeah, since you are anticipating, when you do this, you write it in terms of a new operator, let me call it B, BK dagger, will be UK AK dagger plus BK A minus K. It's a mistake. So it will become an eigenstate in terms of this operator. That is, when you diagonalize this problem, you will get some epsilon k, curly epsilon, bk dagger bk. And this curly epsilon k is something, the new energy after diagonalization, and these b's are connected. And what is interesting is, when you create this new quasi particle, you add a particle and remove a particle from the background. So this has been experimentally seen. That means, if I inject in both ends in condensate the physical atom, then there should be a backflow of a hole, which I think Peterle and company have seen it experimentally. That is what happens in the case of superconductor also.
But here it's all, these are all excited state, not in the PC.
Exactly. So I'm creating an excited state.
Yeah.
So in the ground state, so the excited state, as I said, in the case of free Bose gas, the excitation will involve only a thing, adding a particle in momentum state k. Now, this eigen excitations not only adds a particle but also removes the hole. So it doesn't concern the number. Okay. Now, it's all essentially because you are rewriting the R. So, now let me look at this operator. There is some coefficient. I'm adding an electron. Because I have an interacting system, the quasi-particle becomes two creation operators, one annihilation operator. So, still it's like a creation operator. Now what I am doing is, in this approximation, I am replacing this by some C number, which is a negativity. But this is what you will see beautifully in Tony Leggett's paper. Even though here it looks as if you don't conserve the particle number, in reality you are conserving your particle number, because here you are creating a boson, here you are creating a boson, here you are creating a boson and creating an annihilate. So the number is conserved. It is very clear if you look at them. Case of fermions. Yeah.
So I see how the algebra works in this like finite temperature BEC case, and also how it works in the quantum Ising case, and like just sort of on a high level they look like similar Hamiltonians, so the same trick's going to work, sure. But is there any deeper like physical analogy that can be drawn between the two things? Like, oh yes, this is the sort of system that works with Fourier
exactly.
transformation.
So I think that's what I thought I'd compare operator to BCS theory. How the Cooper pair condensate corresponds to Bose-Einstein condensate. So there is a deeper thing.
Okay.
Yeah. And also, it's also very, very important thing. We all talk about entanglement. When you do Bogoliubov theory, you are entangling modes. There is a quantum entanglement of squeezing up states. That is, the old oscillator, namely this oscillator, because of this kind of term, get actually squeezed. So you can bring in the notion of squeezing of bosons right here. So interaction reduces squeezing.
Maybe this will also be answered when you make that comparison, but I'm just having a little trouble still seeing how the transformation and the Hartree-Fock variational stuff comes together, because in my mind, Bogoliubov was this magical recipe. Whenever I have a quadratic Hamiltonian, I can solve it. So, I'm just
exactly. So
I still don't quite see why, if like V0 were huge, you know,
so
I could use the
what is analog huge thing in the case of superconducting? It is the this operator anticipating what I'm going to do later. This is what is going to become huge. So a pair of electrons, k minus k, form a boson, and this Bose condenses. Whereas in the case of Bogoliubov theory, this started behaving like a classical variable. That's what we saw. Here, a pair of bosons, which is also like a boson, starts behaving like that. Because you notice the momentum is k minus k, zero momentum, and the spin is very sum over, it's a spin single state. So a Cooper pair in a spin single state, they are macroscopic in number in their ground state. So that's why you call Cooper pair condensation is a kind of Bose condensation. So it's all reflected in the mathematics also. But deeply they are different, because they are, one is a fermionic system, another is bosonic system, but there is an underlying commonness. This is what I wanted to do. Yeah, so I also leave it as an exercise to see how whatever I do, Bogoliubov transformation amounts to squeezing a positive. You must have heard about coherent state and squeezed coherent states. All these things are connected. Squeezing entanglement and so on. So, I wanted to do BCS theory, but today I have. So now what I will do is I will not do bubble work theory later. So I have indicated to you that you can reduce a problem into one body problem. Then formally, if you want to do theory, what you will do, you have to take this free energy and minimize. Now if you are interested in ground state energy, you could forget about entropy, you can minimize the general energy and so, yes.
So I'm not very familiar with the variational principle, as in I've seen a little bit, but you were saying that, so to find this partition function, which is hard for complicated Hamiltonians, we wanted to kind of make some approximation and treat it as like one body system just a bunch of times. But how, I don't see how that, what's the connection between introducing this parameter, which is corresponding to this like macroscopic limit,
yes,
in the ground
so,
state? I don't
so
see the connection.
Suppose I did not do anything but Bogoliubov. I said, I have Bogoliubov Hamiltonian, which is complicated. Now I want to solve the problem by approximating Bogoliubov Hamiltonian by a one-body Hamiltonian with an unknown coefficient. Suppose I pretend to do that. So Bogoliubov motivated physically. Because what did we do? We said that the zero momentum operator should behave in a particular way. So if you pick up that alone, that becomes like a classical variable and then it looks like one body. So by physics, he was guided to this form. That's all, nothing more. So without physics, mathematics could have been guided in this form or something more complicated. So it is physics guided into this form, then you invoke variational theory, and then you say whatever you get is a variational upper bound, or lower bound, whatever it is. It's about the demonstrated answer. So that's comforting. Sometimes you may get something totally nonsensical. Here at least there is a bound in whatever it is.
Yes, okay, but I don't see where the what is the dependence of alpha in this approximation like? Is it, are we tracing over a different subspace now, or is,
no,
are we
no.
making row function?
So when you trace over the full Hilbert space, but you focus on some corner of the Hilbert space corresponding to the vacuum of this. See, this is the game. See, now let me schematically, it's a very important point. So, you know, the game that we are playing, it's in fact very often the game that we play is this following many body theory. So, you all agree that Hilbert space is big, right? Even if you have n spin, that Hilbert space is 200 dimensional. It's very rich and big. So, you have a big Hilbert space. In fact, I gave a talk somewhere that titled Why Age in Hilbert Space. The life of a quantum matter physicist often is a why age in Hilbert space, and we are lost. It's like, you know, old voyagers, you know, they were lost in the sea, everywhere. So what do you do? This Hilbert space has some point, which is the ground state of the Hamiltonian that we are looking for. But often, we don't know where it is. Except when you have a situation like Betham's or solvable, integrable conditions, or integrable system. Otherwise, then what do you do? What you do is, you pick up the point randomly. Not randomly, guided by physics, which corresponds to Hilbert space of direct product states or non-interacting system. And then that is connected with the variational parameter. What you do is you do a traverse, like suppose I have some parameter which is closed. Then you change that parameter, then you move into the Hilbert space, and your ground state may be here. So if you do a different hypothesis, then I may do something minimization here. So hoping that all these things are in some way representing what we are needed. So in that sense, you know, it's a many-body, and very often there's a lot of fight in the communities because of everybody is in different part of the Hilbert space. I'm in this part and somebody is in this part, so they have their PRL doesn't get accept their theory, they accept our theory and so on. So it's a voyage in Hilbert space. And Hilbert space, already we saw, you remember, I was telling about EAPA. What Zamolodchikov did was, in the case of Ising model and transfer speed, we know the exact vacuum for the Ising model and transfer speed at the critical point. You can write it down as a pre-Fermion theory, masses and so on. Then he said, when you move away from this point, perturbation, namely, longitudinal magnetic field, he said this approach brings you EH symmetry. That symmetry is related to conformal symmetry because, sorry, this is something I didn't have time to explain. Whenever you solve a problem at the critical point, you all know critical point as scaling vectors. That is, things are quantum fluctuating so much, they look at the same in all length scale. This is the phenomenon of critical ground. And then on top of that, it was discovered by Polyakov and others at Russian school many years ago. And once you have scale invariance, you have something called conformal invariance also. That is, you can direct different regions, and then still it looks like that. So that corresponds to so-called big conformal group. Then it turns out this conformal group has a very simple structure if you live in two dimensions. In higher dimension, they have a different. So you can make exact statements, which is what all these Polyakov and Merit Balog and all these people did. And what Zamanetsko observed was that if you sit here and like move away, you somehow, instead of this huge conformal group, you get EA in place. The EA group starts describing what's going on here. So you notice that the Hilbert space is so rich, we don't appreciate the richness of Hilbert space. So whenever you have pick up theory, what you do is you pick up some convenient point and then go around with respect to that parameter and find out where it may be. Does that answer the question? Yeah. Okay. So now, so I told you briefly about Bobrov transformation, and then I told you briefly about which corner we are in the Hilbert space. As I told you, I remember on the first lecture, I told you about a paper by my friends Joseph Samuel and Suparna. It appeared in the archive 2 years ago. They just take two dimensional Hilbert space, two qubits, sorry, four dimensional Hilbert space, two qubits. And they find, they separate them into direct product state and entanglement state. Already you see Lorentzian metric and physics of general theory of relativity hidden in this two qubit Hilbert space. So there is no velocity of light in this problem, but still the mathematical structure looks like it. So imagine if two qubit can make you so into whatever infinite dimension, n. So that's where in my friends, you know, in Chennai, they worry a lot about this entanglement issue. They say that when you have more qubits, entanglement nature is extremely complicated. We often get away with it. And there is a paper by Arisi, the Nobel laureate, who got Nobel Prize a couple of years ago. He also addressed the question of entanglement of multi-qubit. Even characterizing entanglement in multi-qubit situations becomes hard, like a spin glass problem, which got him Nobel Prize. So the Hilbert space that we deal with is very rich and complicated. And you know, there is a lot of pressure hidden. Okay, I boggle about, you know, 100 some pressures, and there is more for you to under. So I think I'm close to it here. Then tomorrow I will do boggle about theory and then little bit of a topology. Okay, so if you have any more questions, you can.